Let me ask you something before we go anywhere today. How much fuel do you actually need in the tanks to legally start a flight? Not how much you'd like, not how much makes you comfortable. The legal minimum, the number the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, actually wrote down. If you had to answer that right now, out loud, no fumbling, could you? Because here's the uncomfortable truth. Running out of fuel is one of the most common causes of engine failure in general aviation, and it is very close to 100% preventable. Nobody is forcing that airplane into the air with dry tanks. A person made a decision, usually a small one, usually one that felt fine at the time. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern, the show where we try to make you a sharper, safer pilot one topic at a time. Today we're going to take a regulation that everybody memorizes for the written test and then quietly forgets, and we're going to actually understand it. Federal Aviation Regulation, Part 91, Section 151, the fuel requirements for flight under visual flight rules. Stick with me. This one's short, it's simple, and it will absolutely save your life. Before we dig in, let me say a quick thank you to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of this journey we're all on. First solo, there's a coin for that. Passed your private, your instrument, went and got the commercial, they've got a coin to market. Flying is hard, and it's expensive, and the milestones deserve something you can hold in your hand. AviationSoul.com, go take a look. All right, let's walk through this together. Here's what the regulation actually says, and I want you to hear how plain the language is. Under visual flight rules, you may not begin a flight in an airplane unless, considering wind and forecast weather conditions, you have enough fuel to fly to your first point of intended landing, and then assuming normal cruising speed to fly after that for at least 30 minutes in the daytime. At night, that number goes up to 45 minutes. That's it, that's the whole thing for airplanes. 30 minutes day, 45 minutes night. Now, let me pull that apart, because every single phrase in there is doing work. Start with begin a flight. The rule is written about the moment you start. You are not allowed to launch unless the fuel is already there. This isn't a rule about how you land, it's a rule about how you take off. The decision point is on the ground before the wheels leave the pavement when you still have every option in the world. Next phrase, to your first point of intended landing. Notice it does not say your destination, it says your first point of intended landing. If you're planning to stop for fuel halfway, that fuel stop is your first point of intended landing, and the reserve is measured from there. Good. That's how it should work. But be honest with yourself about where you actually intend to land, because it's awfully tempting to draw a fuel stop on the chart and then, when you get there feeling good, decide to just press on. We'll come back to that. Then, assuming normal cruising speed, the reserve is 30 or 45 minutes of flying at your normal cruise burn, not at idle, not leaned out to nothing on the ground. 30 minutes of real, honest book cruise fuel flow. In a lot of trainers, that's somewhere around 4, 5, 6 gallons, in something bigger, a lot more. Know your airplane's number, actually know it. And here's the part people skip right over. Considering wind and forecast weather conditions? The regulation itself tells you to plan against the wind you actually expect and the weather you actually expect. A 40-knot headwind you didn't account for doesn't care that your flight plan looked legal on paper. The rule bakes the wind in on purpose because the wind is exactly what turns a comfortable flight into a fuel emergency. So that's the letter of the law. 30 and 45 measured from your first intended landing, at cruise burn, wind included. Now here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The regulation is a floor. It is the legal minimum. It is not a plan. It is not a target. It is the point below which you are not just unsafe, you're actually breaking a federal regulation, and I have watched too many good pilots treat that floor like it was the goal. They plan to land with exactly 45 minutes on a night cross country and then feel clever about it. Do not do that. The 30 and 45 in the reg are the numbers that keep you legal. The numbers that keep you alive usually start with the word hour. Most experienced pilots I know, myself included, plan to have their wheels on the ground with an hour of fuel still in the tanks day or night. That gives you room for the headwind that was stronger than forecast, room for the destination that's fogged in. And now you're diverting room for the pattern that's full, and tower asks you to extend your downwind three times, room to be human. Let me give you a scenario. Because this is a scenario-based decision show, and the numbers mean nothing until you can feel them. You're on a cross-country, beautiful day. You've got a trainer that holds, let's say, 50 usable gallons, burns about 10 an hour, so you've got roughly 5 hours of flying in full tanks. Your trip is 3.5 hours in still air. On paper, you land with 1.5 hours, gorgeous, legal 3 times over. But you didn't top the tanks. The last renter left it at 3/4, and you were running late and figured, A, plenty. So now you've got maybe 37 usable gallons. Call it 3 hours and 40 minutes of flying. Then the winds aloft came up stronger than the forecast. Your 3.5 hour trip is now 4 hours over the ground. Do you see what just happened? You never touched the throttle wrong. You never did anything dramatic. You just made 2 small, comfortable, reasonable feeling decisions on the ground, and now the arithmetic says you arrive at your destination with the tanks essentially dry, and you are nowhere near legal, and you may not make it at all. Every fuel accident sounds exactly like that when you read the report. It is never one big mistake. It is a chain of small yeses, not topping off, trusting a forecast that changed, skipping the fuel stop because you felt fine, stretching for the destination because you were almost there. The examiner knows this, by the way. Let's talk about your check ride for a minute, because this rule lives right in the Airman Certification Standards, the ACS. When you plan that cross-country for your practical test, the examiner is looking for you to compute your fuel required and your fuel on board, and to show clearly that you have your VFR reserve on top of the trip. They want to see you name the number. 30 minutes if the flight is by day, 45 if any part of it is at night. And they are absolutely allowed to throw a diversion at you halfway through and watch what you do with your remaining fuel. The examiner is looking for a pilot who treats fuel as a hard limit, not a hopeful estimate. A pilot who says out loud, I have this much on board, I'll burn this much to get there, and that leaves me this much reserve, which is more than the regulation requires. Say it like that on your ride and you will make your examiner very happy. Now, one thing I really want to clear up, because it trips people up constantly. There are 2 different ways an engine quits for lack of fuel, and they are not the same thing. The first is fuel exhaustion, that's the simple one. The tanks are dry. There is no more fuel on the airplane. You flew until it was gone. That's what 9151 is trying to prevent, by making sure you always start with a cushion. The second is fuel starvation. And this one is sneakier, because in a fuel starvation there is still fuel on board, the engine just can't get to it. Maybe you've got 20 gallons sitting in the left tank and you're running dry on the right because you forgot to switch. Maybe the fuel selector is in the wrong detent. Maybe there's an unusable pocket the pump can't reach in an unusual attitude. Fuel starvation is a systems management problem. It's about knowing your fuel system. Knowing how your selector works, knowing your tank switching plan, and actually following it on a timer or on a landmark, not just when the engine coughs and reminds you. In a low-wing airplane with a left both right-off selector, that switch is part of your flow, every leg deliberate. Fuel starvation kills pilots who had plenty of gas. Let that sink in. They ran an engine dry with fuel still in the airplane, so the reserve rule keeps you from running out. Good fuel system discipline keeps you from starving with fuel aboard. You need both. One regulation and one habit. Let me give you the practical takeaways. The stuff you can actually use on your next flight starting tomorrow. First, physically look in the tanks before you fly. Not the gauges, the tanks. Aircraft fuel gauges are famously, legally only required to be accurate when they read empty. Read that again. Empty is the one reading you can trust. So use a fuel dipstick calibrated to your airplane and put your eyes on the actual fuel. Every flight, the gauge is a trend, not a truth. Second, know 3 numbers cold for your airplane. Usable fuel in gallons, cruise fuel burn in gallons per hour, and your endurance in hours, which is just the first divided by the second. If you can't rattle those off right now for the airplane you fly most, that's your homework tonight. It's in your pilot's operating handbook. Third, plan your reserve in time, then land with more than you planned. 30 minutes is the legal floor by day, 45 at night. Make your personal minimum 1 hour on the ground and treat it like a hard deck. When your flying fuel drops toward it, you land. You don't negotiate with yourself at altitude. You made the smart decision on the ground when you set the number, so honor it. Fourth, when you're not sure, land and buy fuel. Fuel is cheap. It is the cheapest insurance in all of aviation. Nobody has ever stood on a ramp, safely fueled, wishing they'd stretched it another 40 miles. But the reverse, the pilot who wishes they'd stopped, that's in the accident reports over and over and over. And fifth, tie it all together. The regulation, 9151, is not the enemy and it's not the goal. It's the fence at the edge of the cliff. Your job is to fly your whole life without ever getting close enough to touch it. Here's the thing about this rule that I love, honestly. Most of the ways an airplane can hurt you are complicated. Weather is complicated. Aerodynamics at the edge of the envelope. Complicated. Systems failures. Complicated. But this one? This one is arithmetic you learned in grade school. Gallons divided by gallons per hour equals hours. Compare that to the length of your trip. Leave yourself a big cushion. That's it. The airplane will fly beautifully right up until the moment the fuel runs out, and then it becomes a very heavy glider, and where you end up is no longer entirely your choice. So keep the choice, keep it on the ground, where it belongs, before every flight, by putting more than enough fuel in the tanks and knowing exactly how much is there. That's our topic. The regulation is FAR 9151, and you can read the whole thing in plain English on the FAA's website, along with the discussion of fuel planning in the Airplane Flying Handbook, which I genuinely encourage you to go read tonight. Thanks for spending part of your day up here with me. There's more on the show at RadioHangar.com if you want it. Go top your tanks, know your numbers, and I'll see you next time in the pattern.